A minha colega e editora Luciana Fraguas está com uma série de podcasts chamada Virada Verde, a qual você pode encontrar no nosso website ou em qualquer plataforma onde ouça seus podcasts. Para esta série, ela conversou esta manhã com o ministro assistente para a Mudança Climática e Energia da Austrália, o Josh Wilson, que está em Belém, no Brasil, para a COP30. Na pauta, a candidatura da Austrália para sediar a COP31 e a candidatura rival da Turquia, e também a ausência do primeiro-ministro Anthony Albanese da maior conferência de clima do mundo. Wilson também disse que é possível a COP sair do papel sem dois grandes players, Estados Unidos e China. Também fala sobre as vozes indígenas na COP e o futuro da parceria entre os dois gigantes do sul global, Austrália e Brasil, e o que um pode aprender com o outro. A conversa, evidentemente, foi em inglês. Vamos ouvir.
We are crossing now to Belém in northern Brazil, a city in the Amazon region that's hosting COP30, the biggest United Nations climate conference. As we watch leaders and ministers gather to accelerate action on what was established at Paris Agreement 10 years ago, and our biggest challenge, the climate crisis. From Belém, we are joined by Australia's Assistant Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Josh Wilson, the highest-ranking Australian representative at the talks. Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, and very good to be with you.
Before we dive into COP, is this your first time in Brazil? Did you get to visit the Amazon?
It is my first time in Brazil. Of course, I'm very focused on the work that's happening at COP. But I have had the opportunity to see a little bit of the city, and of course, the sort of the Amazon River Delta. And it's an incredibly impressive part of the world, and being on the edge of the green lung of the Amazon reinforces the importance of the work that is going on here at Belém, and the leadership of Brazil around the importance of global cooperative action to combat dangerous climate change and to deliver the energy transition in a way that's effective and fair.
I imagine it's a powerful image to see the Amazon, to feel the weather, and it should be an experience. And what's the atmosphere like at COP so far? We are now on day two. I believe you finished day two of COP30. What are your key takeaways so far?
Well, I was here last week for the Leaders Summit part, and then, of course, we're on day two of the COP program, and there is certainly a sense of resolution. There's a sense of energy, and I think some optimism, but also realism, because the multilateral system has taken a few knocks in recent times, and we need processes like this to be at their best in all of our interests to see concerted global action on what is really the biggest challenge we face in the 21st century and more than likely in the 22nd century. But President Lula spoke very impressively and forcefully in the Leaders Summit part of the program, and some of the plenary contributions, including from leaders in the Pacific, have reinforced the urgent need for us to keep going forward, decarbonizing, reducing emissions, controlling temperature to make sure that we have a safe climate and a safe planet. And of course, to do that by the energy transition, by investing in renewables and clean industry technology, but making sure that as we do that, we bring everybody along, because some of the communities that are most affected by climate change are the ones that have contributed least to it, and they're also communities that face significant development challenges. And that's true about the Pacific, and that's why, obviously, as we participate wholeheartedly in COP30, we are also making an argument for seeing COP31 come to the Pacific to be shared in partnership between Australia and Pacific nations.
You've been in meetings with other leaders, the Brazilian President Lula, Keir Starmer, and Manuel Macron. How can we act despite the withdrawal, the completely withdrawal of the United States from these conversations?
Well, we need to remember that these kinds of efforts don't rest on any single nation. Mm. Obviously, they work best if everyone is part of it, and it would make a big difference if the United States had continued as it has done in the past, both to contribute to the work and to be a beneficiary of it. But we know that there are ups and downs in every journey. There are, you know, bumps along the road, and we have to take those in our stride. And there is a lot of enthusiasm, energy, commitment, problem-solving focus across the global community and the global north and the global south, as we say. And there are lots of leaders that are making that point in no uncertain terms, as well as other kinds of representatives, ministerial representatives like myself and ambassadors and others. And because that's the nature of the COP, that it's not just about government representatives, civil society, you know, environmental and energy groups and groups representing First Nations interests and people wanting to see continued work on gender equality. You know, all of those voices are here. And I've had some fantastic roundtable meetings with First Nations representatives, with young Australians, with civil society, to hear from them about their priorities, their work here, and what they would like to see if we're successful in bringing COP31 to the Blue Pacific continent.
Australia is competing with Turkey. How is that competition going? Have you spoken to the Turkish delegation? And when will we know who gets to host COP31?
Well, we hopefully will know by the end of this process. We would love that issue to be resolved as soon as possible. But, you know, these things can take time. And ultimately, it's a sort of a consensus decision rather than having a particular mechanism or a vote. The Australia Pavilion and the Turkish Pavilion are side by side. And, we are a good friend to Turkey, and we understand why they've wanted to be part of this process. What we've done with the Pacific, we believe convincing, compelling argument for why the world needs to come and understand the climate challenges in our part of the world, go from the green lungs of the Amazon to the blue lungs of the Pacific. And we've got very strong support from across the global community for that proposition. But it's ultimately a good faith and goodwill process. That's how we've conducted ourselves, respecting Turkey's interest, of course, but hoping that we can come to a resolution that will see the continued momentum and stability of this process, because that's what the world needs from COP to COP.
When you say we will know at the end of this process, which process? Like the end of COP?
The end of COP. Yes, okay. The end of COP.
2 weeks' time. And there is no voting. The selection process is just a consensus.
Well, there's, you know, the way that COP has worked is that different regional groups sort of take turns, so that we see the COP being hosted in different parts of the world. It's the time of the group that Australia is part of, and we have very strong support because the case for bringing the world to the Pacific, it would be the first partnership of this kind between Australia and the Pacific. The case is very strong. The feedback we get is very, very positive. But the way that the decision is made involves consensus through a goodwill and good spirit form of engagement, and that's how we will continue to approach it. You know, putting our best foot forward, we think it's the responsible thing to do. We know that our Pacific family are very committed to the value of bringing the world to our part of the planet, and we think it's the responsible thing for Australia to do. And we believe really that it's in our national interest. I mean, we have a strong reason to want to see effective climate action. And we have a very, very strong interest in the energy transition that has taken such big steps forward over the last 3.5 years of the Albanese government.
The Amazon is central to indigenous climate action. If COP31 happens here in the Pacific, in Australia, how important is it for Australia to include indigenous voices? How inspired are you by COP30 in the Amazon?
Well, it is inspirational. You know, the Amazon is one of the great natural features of the earth. It makes such a beneficial contribution to biodiversity, to the creation of oxygen and the health of our planet. It is a wonder of the world, and it's a privilege to be here and be able to experience it directly, because as much as you know, you read about things or you see a fantastic documentary about a wonder like the Amazon, being proximate to it is something different again. So we do take that inspiration, and you're right to say that part of Brazil's leadership and focus has drawn strength from its indigenous traditions, and we believe that First Nations aspect of our life in Australia, but also the life of the Pacific family, is one of the really strong arguments for bringing the world to our part of the planet. And I had a great roundtable with First Nations representatives who emphasised that to me, said that they are supportive of seeing the COP in Adelaide next year and talking about the kinds of things that they want to showcase, because we do have some examples. You know, I'm, as the Assistant Minister, responsible for the Savannah fire-burning ACU method, which has seen the practice of pool temperature pattern burns by First Nations organisations in northern Australia that have been remarkably effective in reducing emission abatements through large hot fires. And they've also been effective in sequestering carbon and delivering biodiversity outcomes as well. So we think that there are some aspects of our First Nations culture and its many thousands of years of demonstrated sustainability practice that would be a feature of a COP in partnership between Australia and the Pacific.
We have your delegation there, and I believe Minister Chris Bowen is also going to the Amazon next week. Why didn't Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is attending the event? Why he's not there?
Well, sure. As you can imagine, your listeners would imagine, the Prime Minister has a busy schedule at the best of times, and he's done some very important work on Australia's behalf in a number of different international forums in recent times. There are some leaders who are able to attend COP, but in many cases, the involvement of the delegations is led by a minister, in some cases even by an ambassador or another kind of representative. You know, the way that Australia approaches COP 30, this COP is similar to how we participated very effectively last year at COP 29 in Azerbaijan. I'm here in the first week, and then Minister Bowen, the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, will come in the second week, which is when a lot of the COP 30 agenda negotiations really get worked out. And Minister Bowen played an important role in helping to ensure that the last COP actually delivered on a new global finance commitment or mechanism. And I know that he will be looking forward to getting over here in a few days' time and picking up that work again, just as I've been privileged to support our delegation here and engage with other delegations and ministerial representatives over the last 4 or 5 days. That's entirely the way that we've approached this in the past. And of course, you know, the sort of contact between Australia and Turkey over recent months continues to occur between leaders and senior ministers like Minister Bowen and our foreign minister, as we seek in a goodwill and good faith fashion to resolve the issue of who has the, you know, the responsibility, the stewardship of hosting COP 31.
You are in Brazil. Australia and Brazil are two giants of the global south. What can we learn from each other? We are working together on clean energy and biodiversity. Both Brazil is 80% in renewables, power, hydro industry. What can we learn from each other? Are there any agreements, projects of working together, maybe a back-to-back COP? How do you see this partnership?
Well, it's exactly as you say. I mean, we're both very large territorial nations in the Southern Hemisphere. We both have significant strength that comes to us through our First Nations heritage, which we need to value and protect and draw upon. Brazil has shown great leadership, as you say. You know, a significant renewable energy producer, and it has been a great advocate for concerted action. President Lula has done a really good job in making this the implementation COP, or some are calling it the truth COP, you know, saying it's time for the global community to really focus on the commitments we've made and keep seeing those implemented. So, you know, we would carry some of those things forward. We are also a country that's blessed with renewable energy resources, and we've achieved some remarkable things, and we've doubled renewable energy generation in Australia in the last 6 years, and we'll do that again before 2030. Certainly our NDC, our commitment to reduce emissions from between 62 and 70% by 2035, and our target of 82% renewables generate a lot of respect when you get together in global gatherings like this one. We would love to, you know, pick up the important work that is occurring here under the leadership of President Lula and Brazil, and carry that forward in a stable sort of forward trajectory way, which is what the world needs. And some of the things that they've championed around forests and the protection of forest, the need to look at and integrate our sort of fire landscape management, focus on the significance of zero emission liquid fuels. You know, these are things, imperatives that we share with Brazil and that the Pacific shares with Brazil. And hopefully, if things go well in the next couple of weeks, we will get to carry forward the legacy of COP30 into another Southern Hemisphere COP, COP31, in Adelaide.
As you mentioned about the NDCs, the Paris Agreement set ambitious goals, but emissions keep rising. What can we do to change ambition into action? We woke up this morning here in Australia. The Liberal Party is meeting, discussing scrapping net zero targets. What is your response to that?
Well, look, nothing would be more harmful than the approach that the Liberal Party is currently considering. You know, nothing would be more harmful in terms of our international reputation, our future as a destination for investment, for jobs, for the broader economic, social, environmental well-being of Australia. I mean, everybody the world over knows how real and serious climate change is and how much we need to make a contribution to creating the safest climate that we can through emission reductions. And in Australia, frankly, you know, people have voted with their feet. We're the highest penetration distributed rooftop solar jurisdiction in the world. One in three Australian households have home solar. In my state of Western Australia, it's two in five. And now our cheaper home battery program is seeing people take on home storage as well. We know that people want more options when it comes to zero emission vehicles, which they didn't have under the previous government. It's important that every country does what it can to tackle what is a global problem of enormous magnitude. Australia certainly has lodged a very ambitious NDC. It's right up there with the target that the European Union has adopted. And it's very, very welcome in the global community. Of course, we're encouraging through this process, we're encouraging countries to lodge their NDCs if they haven't, their commitments to reduce emissions by 2035. And we are always an active part of the conversation in saying that the targets are the first step and then implementing the targets are the second step. And that's something that Australia can proudly say, that every time we've set a target, we've also had the accompanying plan, as we do in this case, the net zero plan across six sectors of our economy that chart the way forward so that we actually deliver on that. And it is not just important because of the risks that climate change represents to almost every area of our life, but it is also the way that we can benefit from our incredible comparative advantages in this inevitable global transformation to clean energy and clean industries. So yeah, I think that's well understood actually in the Australian community, and I frankly don't understand why the Liberal Party or the Coalition more broadly seems to find itself in this never-ending obsession and death spiral around climate denialism, because it is the denial of of the reality, both in terms of the climate and our economic future.
Thank you, Minister, Assistant Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Josh Wilson, speaking to us from Belém do Pará, Amazon. Thank you so much for your time today and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for the conversation. Really appreciate it.